Welcome back, everyone, to Constructive Uncoupling. I'm Judy Weigel, your amicable divorce expert. Today, I want you to meet one of my most favorite colleagues, Dr. Kathy Memel. She's been a psychotherapist for 40 years. She is my go-to person when I need to learn anything about myself. And I send my couples to her that really need extraordinary help in parenting plans and dealing with custody issues in a tough divorce. Welcome, Kathy.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, Kathy, 40 years.
Yes.
Long journey.
Yes.
You love what you do.
I love it.
Okay. So, I think it's really important for people to know how you got into the business.
Well, let me tell you. When I was a little girl, I grew up in a household with a lot of conflict. And I used to sit on my front porch and look at all the neighbors and look at each household and say, what is going on here? I wanted to know why people got together, and stayed stuck. So the lady across the street used to come home once a week with a black eye. The one up the street was depressed and never got any help or medication. So she was in bed all day long, and her husband was depressed. And another lady down the street, she was always screaming and yelling at her husband, and we could hear her throughout the neighborhood. The neighbors next door, at midnight every Wednesday, she would smash a whole set of dishes. And so I would wonder, why do people choose this? Why are they doing this? It didn't make any sense to me. So I always wanted to study psychology, and I went to college to go be a teacher. And so it's interesting that I'm now a different kind of teacher. But when I work with people, it is really a mutual learning experience. So after college, I went to go work for an attorney, and he was a family law specialist. So he taught me to be a paralegal, and I handled 40 divorces a month for 5 years. And it was very interesting because he had me sit in the back of the room, and he would always ask the couple, why did you marry this person? And they would say, you know, I knew the day that I put the invitations in the mail, I shouldn't have done it. I hesitated putting those invitations in the mail. Another one said, gee, well, right before I was going to walk down the aisle, I told my maid of honor, well, it's too late now. And these are the kind of stories I heard. I knew I shouldn't have married him. I married her because she promised me kids. I married him because he offered security and he had lots of money. So it was a very rich experience in also learning not to judge other people, because people do things that make sense to them at the time, even though their gut tells them, don't do this. So our gut is really where our intuition is, and it tells us what we should do or what path we have an option to choose, I should say. So that's how I got into
this. Kathy, so yes. I'm going to make a true confession to you. I knew the evening before my wedding that it probably wasn't the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a marvelous human being.
Mm-hmm.
Really, there was no damage done. But my gut told me that mm-hmm. I wasn't settled. I wasn't happy the way I think you're supposed to be happy. It was a nice wedding day, but it was an 8-year marriage and it didn't work out. Amicable.
Mm-hmm.
Amicable meaning we could talk to one another to make decisions and nobody was hiding anything. So mm-hmm. it was amicable. But I knew, I didn't know in the lead up. It felt right in the lead up.
Mm-hmm.
But when it actually came to doing it, like the day before you have your party, it didn't feel right. And how many people have you had in your office that said the same thing?
Most of them.
And what are they supposed to do? I mean, people listening, I'm sure, have had this same experience, or maybe people about to get married are listening right now. What do we tell them?
Everybody has a path to learn lessons with. Okay, so sometimes our gut will tell us, don't marry this person, but we feel we have to. So what if you go through with it, what lessons are you supposed to learn? So it's not so much the mistakes we make, it's what do we learn from those mistakes? So if you marry somebody that you deep down inside said, oh, I shouldn't do it. So what did you learn from that experience? What did you learn from that experience?
I learned that Well, I learned about me, first of all. I learned what I needed for a healthy relationship. I learned to follow my instincts. But the issue is then, you know, what do you do that day, the night of? I actually had a client who I divorced. She was punched by her husband the morning of the wedding day. What do you do?
Whoa. If you have enough self-esteem, if you have enough courage, if you have even a little bit of awareness in that situation, you walk away. You walk away. I would say you don't marry somebody who abuses you. That is not okay.
Because the money just isn't worth it that you just spend on
the
wedding.
The emotional interest rate on marrying somebody with money is way too high. And it never makes somebody happy. I've seen that over and over and over again, where young girls will marry older men and they're miserable. They might be happy for the first 6 months. They get to go shopping everywhere, blah, blah, blah. However, their heart is not connected to the other person's heart. So if you get married, do you really love this person? Can you handle the parts of them that you don't like? Can you love them anyway? Because you're not going to change another person. And people think when I get married, I can change this person.
Always.
And that is not true.
Right.
We never have the power to change anybody. We only have the power to change ourselves. But it takes some time to be introspective. So out of all the divorces that I did when I was in working for the family law attorney, 5 people out of 5 years said, I fell in love and I thought this was going to work. Everybody else had all the reasons why they knew they shouldn't have gotten married. Some of them learned from that experience and chose somebody different the next time and lived a more fulfilling life. And others, because they didn't take the time to look inside, they started marrying people just like the first wife. The second wife was the same. The third wife
That's
was
right.
the same. The fourth
yeah.
wife is the same. And they wonder, oh, my God. You know, there was a movie with Dolly Parton once where she says, you know, you keep looking for cornflakes, different packaging, but there's still cornflakes inside. So how do you not do that? It takes some time to think and analyze, who am I? What do I want? What do I think? What am I willing to take a risk to say to the other person to get my needs met? And where do you go from there?
So interestingly, we both belong to Southern California Mediation Association.
Yes.
Kathy, by the way, is so skilled at working with parents developing parenting plans, high-stress couples, that she is the go-to person in Los Angeles for attorneys that are in litigated divorces and can't get the parents to decide on parenting plans. And that, I think, is the hardest thing to do. Dividing assets and debts is one issue in a divorce. But dealing with parents, it's the piece of the divorce that keeps on giving. Children keep you connected as a family on a certain level. And I'm intrigued. Now you're in this marriage and you have your lessons to learn. Now you're transitioning out of the marriage, but you're staying as a family. Do you have any approaches that you can share?
Yes. First of all, it's important to acknowledge that people are in trauma. It is a very painful, agonizing thing to go through a divorce. We all still believe that when you get married, it's forever and nothing ever changes. And that is the farthest thing from the truth. So when people get divorced, it's the end of a dream and it feels like a death. So they are going through tremendous grief and loss. And they're so furious that how come she isn't staying with me? How come he isn't staying with me? Even if they're miserable. So they end up fighting back and forth. And unfortunately, they get the children involved. Some people do, some people don't. Some of the couples that come to me, what I do is they are so stressed out that I like to see them individually first so I could have uninterrupted time with each parent to hear their perspectives and their concerns. Then I bring them together. So when they come in together in the office, they each know I have heard every detail of their story. Then what we do is I create a parenting plan. I have a great big tablet and I draw 3 generations. There's a square for males and a circle for females so we can delineate. And as we go back, here's an example. a girl came in and her grandparents were married 7 years, had 2 kids, and got divorced. So I'm drawing her parenting plan. Her parents were married 7 years, had 2 kids, and got divorced. She's sitting there. I said, well, tell me about you. She goes, oh, my God, I've been married 7 years, have 2 kids, and now I'm getting divorced. How did that happen? So our unconscious experiences from childhood do come into our adulthood. So oftentimes, when people can see that it's not their fault, that this is something they learned, and they learned it from parents who meant well. A lot of them do, some don't. But what we learn, we carry into our own marriages. And when we get stressed, we repeat the same patterns. So if you are married to somebody in your family, and there's a lot of yelling and screaming, you bring that yelling and screaming into your family unless you choose to do some work on yourself to do it differently. So there was another couple, they were from the Philippines, and they were married for 20 years, and the father came in just furious because she had had an affair. How dare she? She's never going to take our son. I'm never going to allow her to see that boy again. And I just let him talk. He needed to vent. He needed to have somebody hear his story. That's the other part of this, is acknowledging where somebody's at. So after he calmed down for a minute, I said, what was that like for you? I said, because your father, his grandfather married a woman who had an affair, and he took the son, and the son never saw him again. His father was married to his mother. His mother had an affair. The father took him, the client in my office, took the child, and the kid never saw his mother again.
Oh, my gosh.
So now he was in my office, and I said, so now you're saying, I don't want her to ever see my son again.
Oh, wow.
I said, what was that like for you as a little boy, never to see his mother again? And he burst into tears. And he must have sobbed for 15 minutes. And my heart went out to him because he was reliving that trauma and unconsciously repeating what he learned. So after he settled down a little bit, I said, do you really want your boy to go through what you went through all those years, no matter how furious your parent was at the spouse? And he said, no. And we worked out a parenting plan. So it's not that I have magic or fairy dust. It's, does that person have the ability to look inside and say, okay, I have the opportunity to change things. This generation of taking away children has to stop. And he had the courage to do it, no matter how hurt he was.
Okay, this is fascinating, and you've said this before, but when you talk about we repeat the actions that we've learned,
yes,
in our own homes, this is not about blaming parents, and
no.
I want to make that very clear.
No, very clear.
Because our parents, us, our children, we're all on a journey to learn.
Yes.
And we cannot diminish anybody else's journey. We just have to learn about our own journey in context with the people who come into our lives and those who we choose to keep in our lives for whatever amount of time that person is important to us, right?
Yes. Yes. So when I do this family tree, I preface it with, this is looked at from a position of understanding, not blame or criticizing. I'm not criticizing anybody.
Right.
We're just learning what patterns have been passed on down. So you can see through the family tree, anger gets passed on down. Addiction gets passed on down. Loving kindness gets passed on down. Joy and celebration gets passed on down. So we have to look at the richness and those parts that are challenging that we have the power to shift.
Now, you asked me a few minutes ago, what did I learn from my marriage?
Yes.
And I learned that I had started to take on the tone and the approach my mother took with my father. Now, I really feel that I was very lucky and had two wonderful parents. I call my father a saint. I just feel so lucky he was my dad.
You are lucky.
And I do also feel lucky that my mother was my mother. But my mother had a lot more to work out in this life than my dad. I think my dad was maybe a little more evolved.
Yes.
Maybe because, you know, if you believe in multiple lifetimes, mm-hmm, perhaps he was just more evolved and at a later stage in his evolutionary scale. Mom, not quite so much, but my mother, a very giving person, did wonderful things, excellent homemaker, and my siblings and I are very close and very appreciative. But in terms of just the relationship between my mother and my father, I unconsciously took on maybe the control issues that my mother had that weren't that healthy to have.
Give me an example.
Complaining, constant complaining. I turned into a little complainer, and I didn't even realize it.
Yes.
And he had to say, hey, you're... And I said, oh, my gosh, let me take a step back. I'm so sorry. My dad didn't care about money. He made a good living. But he wasn't going to be a multimillionaire. He really wanted to spend time with his family.
Wow.
The man I chose initially had no interest in money. He had an interest in being kind. My father had a great interest in being kind. So I chose the kindness. I gravitated towards the kindness. But there are other things about him and the way we work together that just weren't practical. So let me digress for a second. I kind of cut my own self off when I said we belong to Southern California Mediation Association. And there was a class I went to a few years ago presented by a lawyer and a therapist. And it was about why do some couples stay together and others don't. And the bottom line presented was, the couples who stayed together, and there were videotapes. People actually talked about why they stayed together 50, 60 years. It's because the little habits of each other didn't bother the other person. They were very accepting of the idiosyncrasies.
Yes.
What do you think?
Yes, that's absolutely true. Yes. Because you can love somebody, but you can also not like them. Or you can love somebody and you like them. And if you see whatever their faults are, if you can live with it and you can talk about it, communication is a big key to this. And people will sometimes think, oh, I better not bring this up because he's going to get mad. I better not say it this way because she's going to get mad. It's better to take the risk and talk it through. Most of the couples that I see when I first come in here, they will say, okay, so what do we do about all this? And I'll say, well, you know, just take one step at a time. Let's look inside. Let's see what we learn. And let's see what you'd be willing to shift. So let's say you like pancakes, but you were taught to put salt in them. And they always taste bad. And you think, how come my pancakes don't taste good? But somebody says, take out the salt. And you go, oh my God, this is so great. So learning something new can be difficult at first and doable. And doable.
All right, so people listening now, they're in the middle of a divorce.
Yes.
And it's a little contentious.
Or very contentious.
Or very contentious. And they have children.
Yes.
So what should they do? Well, we're going to get them, we're going to give your information out before we end the podcast. If they choose to come and see you, I think that would be a really good choice. But they're not in Los Angeles. They're in another state, and they're listening to the podcast. What should they do to understand, to mitigate, to make it better?
There's a great book called The Good Divorce by Constance Ahrens, and I would invite them to read that. And there's another one called Your Divorce Resource. And okay, that's the first step, to acquaint yourself with the process, because going through divorce is like going to Mars and nobody tells you what Mars is like.
And it's the most fearful experience of anybody's life.
It's terrifying. Even though we see it in movies, even though we see it on TV and read it in books, it is so stressful that when your mind is flooded, it's hard to make decisions. So I always invite people, if they're out of state, if they're in another county other than Los Angeles, get yourself a divorce therapist, somebody who understands the process and can help you through this journey, because it's hard. It's hard.
You know what? And that is, I know some people do use therapists, other people don't. Some people don't even think about using a therapist simply for themselves.
Yes.
To calm down.
Yes, yes. And also not to get caught in the blame system of it's all his fault. We all have a part in the dissolution of a marriage. And if we can start to own those parts, we can heal those parts and get ourselves strengthened to a place where we might choose a different partner next time. But going through that process is really hard. It's a journey, and you just have to take one step at a time. So if you go and see a therapist, somebody who specializes and understands divorce, that's the first step. The second step is learning all the things you have to do to get through the process of divorce. And the most important thing is your children. So when you marry, that's just you and the partner, fine. But when you have children, those children have to come first. So no matter how angry you are, no matter how upset, this child, these children need parents that are going to be thinking about them. So I remember going to a conference once, and they had a panel of adult men who had been through a divorce. And one adult man said, you know, my parents got along great. They were angry at each other. We knew it. But they always went to our games together. They always went to our parent-teachers conferences together. They always went to our games together. Everything was cooperative and respectful. And they even did something called nesting, where they kept the family home for us. And each parent took a week and moved in. So they had separate residences. Now, not everybody can afford this, but this is just an example of nesting. And because they got along, nesting only works if the parents are very communicative. Then the second guy who came in, he said, I am now 50 years old, and for the first time, I have a girlfriend. Because I was so traumatized by my parents' divorce, I swore I would never get involved. So the impact that parents have, whatever they do, those children are going to copy and learn from, either in a good way or a destructive way. So what this guy saw in his family, he could see everybody was in pain. Nobody got any counseling. Nobody got any help. And so here he is, 50 years old, for the first time he has a girlfriend. The third guy, He says, when my parents got divorced, he says, I was 7 years old and my father left. He just left, never said goodbye, never sent any support. And every week I was in line at the welfare office with my mother so that we could get money so she could put food on the table and also work full time. He said, now, he says, I am 62 years old. And for the first time, I have a girlfriend and I'm thinking about getting married. So I tell these stories to parents because it is crucial that they begin to realize what they do and say has a huge impact on the future of their child. So I'll ask parents sometimes, is your love for your child greater than the hatred for your father? Or vice versa? And sometimes they don't hear it at first. I have to repeat it again at another time where I feel maybe they could take it in. But the first time I say it, it's like planting a seed.
Right.
So what they do is really, really important. And I have a sheet of all these things that children need. They don't need parents fighting. They don't need, it's just too stressful.
Out of all the fearful things for children, am I going to stay in my same school? Will I keep my friends? What if I forget my things at one house when I'm at another house? I listen to children talk, and the bottom line is they just want their parents to get along and everything else works itself out.
Yes.
Right?
And for parents to reassure, look, this is going on. I'm so sorry you have to go through this. We tried to make it work. We really did. And none of this is your fault. Kids really need to hear none of this is your fault.
Now, why is that?
Because children, their minds are still developing. They're very young. And whether they are 5 years old or even 15 years old, they take it as, oh, I didn't put away my teddy bear. That's why they're getting a divorce. Or I didn't empty out the trash when mommy said, so it's all my fault that they got into a big fight and now they're getting a divorce. So they feel all this guilt. So they need a stable, calm parent. Even if the person goes out and screams at the end of the block and then comes back and talks to their child and says, look, sweetheart, none of this is your fault. We will work it out. Everything will be okay. Don't worry. And I will always love your mother. I will always love your father because I had you.
That is so sweet.
So we'll get through this together as a family. We're still going to be a family. It's just going to be a reorganized family. and we're going to take one step at a time, and all of us are going to learn how to do this better.
All right, so to recap, since we're getting to the end of our time, you can only do this, Kathy, if you A, forgive yourself for being in a marriage that you know cannot last the rest of your life.
Yes.
B, you don't blame yourself or your soon-to-be ex-spouse because that gets you nowhere. C, you really take a look back at the roots of the behavior so that you can really not blame, to see if your partner, if your spouse is repeating the behavior of his parents and his family, mm-hmm. because we do tend to repeat.
Or her parents and her family.
Right. Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah. We are not gender bashing here.
Right.
But yes, true, you have to do all of these, and then you have to give yourself a break. You may have to take it a little slow through the divorce.
Yes.
Maybe you just can't, we just want to get it done now. You can't do that. You have to breathe.
You have to breathe and you have to get through it. Sometimes clients will come in and say, okay, how many sessions do I have to do this? How do I get through this real
right.
quick? And I said, you know, if I found you in the desert and you weighed 80 pounds, I couldn't take you to the finest restaurant and give you a steak. You have to start off with drops of water and then maybe juices and then maybe mushed fruits. I said, that's how your body slowly integrates. And that's what we're doing here. Because when you're in trauma, you can only take in a little bit at a time. And we have to honor that process of that person. Very important.
Yes. Patience is golden.
And validation.
Yes.
Validation.
Also. Kathy, how do people get in touch with you?
My office is in Beverly Hills. My telephone number is 310-286-9201. And I am really...
Say it one more time.
310-286-9201.
Do you accept emails or do you prefer phone calls?
Both is fine.
Go ahead and give your email address.
info@drkathymemel.com.
info@drkathymemel.com.
Yes.
Kathy, thank you so much. And Kathy will be a recurring guest, so you get more of her later.
It was a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much.